Welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring the insightful reviews of Mr. Film and Mr. Movie. This week we review X-Men First Class, Beginners, and Submarine. And now here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film. Hello, I'm Mr. Movie.
And I'm Mr. Film. Now first up, we go back to the future, to the groovy past, in X-Men First Class.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States.
You ready for this?
Let's find out.
Listen to me very carefully, my friend. Killing will not bring you peace.
Peace was never an option.
In this prequel reboot of the X-Men franchise, we learn how Professor X, played by James McAvoy, and Magneto, played by Michael Fassbender, met and fell out during the events of the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. Professor X, known as Charles in this film, is a privileged, brilliant young telepath who has just earned his PhD from Oxford. He's fascinated by the mutations that are rapidly changing humanity thanks to the atomic age. And he lives a blissful life with his adopted mutant sister, Raven, who we'll later come to know as Mystique for fans of the series. Magneto, known as Eric here, is a Holocaust survivor who has spent the post-war years tracking down Dr. Schmidt, played by Kevin Bacon, a Nazi physician who tortured and trained him in the use of his powers. Eric's goal is not a happy reunion. Eventually, Charles and Eric meet and form a team of mutants to stop Schmidt, who's running a evil secret organization. He's a mutant himself, and he has a band, which includes the fetching January Jones as Emma Frost, a telepath who can also transform herself into diamonds. Now, Mr. Movie, a few weeks ago, we reviewed the turgid Thor. Well, although that film has been popular and quite successful financially, if you're looking for a superhero flick, forget Thor. Go see X-Men First Class. Director Matthew Vaughn, who directed last year's superhero satire Kick-Ass, which was on my 10 best list, gives us a straight-up adventure yarn set in the 1960s. It's a good period piece. Think Mad Men meets James Bond. Cool, fun, sexy, and exciting. And pays homage to the original comic book with an intelligence that is getting rarer and rarer in the burgeoning superhero genre. Now, the original X-Men was meant to be an exploration of race in America. And the film handles this subject a little ham-fistedly at times, but in a way that's interesting all the same. Charles' mutation is hidden and can remain so he's never been the object of derision or persecution. Eric, a Jew and a mutant, knows that this new race of men and women will eventually be targeted by a fearful human society. But thankfully, the film doesn't ever stall out with this debate. Vaughn keeps things moving, gives us a great villain in Schmidt, who has a really cool set of powers and a submarine straight out of a Bond film, and who has a really great diabolical plan, which hinges on the events of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, while the PG-13 film from 20th Century Fox works more or less throughout its 2-hour and 12-minute length, which admittedly is about 20 minutes too long, there are a few missteps. The very end doesn't quite work, though the final fight is very clever. And the scene that brings together all of the young mutants earlier in the film is overlong and, frankly, sort of stupid in parts. The film clicks best when McAvoy and particularly Fassbender are on the screen. Both are great, and Fassbender verges on the electrifying, or if you will, magnetic. I couldn't resist. He was a standout in last year's Inglourious Basterds, and he shows here that he can carry a film on his own. Bacon, too, is really great, probably one of his best performances in a big picture in a few years. He's dangerous, icy, and cool. January Jones is pretty, but her limitations as an actress are glaringly highlighted here. Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique is also quite good, vulnerable, smart, and smoldering in that way young women in the bloom of their sexuality can be. Rose Byrne as the non-mutant McTaggart has a rather thankless role, but she acquits herself well. Now, fans of the series don't don't be worried. You should be on the lookout for a few fun cameos from other X-Men mainstays as well. Now, I'm ready to get back in the classroom with these mutants, and I hope that this is the start of a new franchise and Vaughn has more up his creative sleeve. I'm giving this an A-.
Wow. Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this, Mr.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I mean, given this is supposed to be the birthing of the X-Men story, I think that necessarily makes it a little bit more cerebral, which you touched on. It's less about the gimmick of the superpowers and mutations and more about how they came to be.
Yeah.
And I think it helps us appreciate the franchise a little better, too, as a whole. And you know, any movie that lifts up the franchise and all the other movies we've seen before, I think deserves kudos, especially since the last installment was pretty blah.
Yeah,
You mentioned Kevin Bacon here. I liked him a lot. He was an interesting character. He had a pretty cool mutant power. And you stole the words right out of my mouth. The James Bond-esque toys submarine there was pretty fun to watch and watch him play with as he fended off all the good guys. You know, until that ultimate battle scene, which of course we could see coming from a mile away.
Yeah, of course.
But you know, so what? I mean, this is supposed to be about the journey and enjoy it. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I especially like Jennifer Lawrence, who plays the Mystique character here, who was nominated for an Oscar in Winter's Bone, and we saw recently also in The Beaver. And I think she's got a decent career ahead of her. She shows us that a superhero character can have depth even when competing for screen time with about a dozen other superhero characters. And that's a tribute to decent writing and good acting. So kudos to her and the writers. I like that there's more complexity to the Mystique character than I remembered from the first movies. So that was a nice surprise here. You also mentioned here the thematic elements in this, that X-Men is supposed to be an exploration of race and whatnot, and you know, we get to deal with some good issues here of prejudice and whatnot. And granted, it's not really very deep, it only goes down to a certain level, but at least it tries to take on issues in our current culture and use the superhero mutant characters to deal with, you know, very current and modern day themes.
Yeah.
And I think that's what comic books strive to do at their best. And I think that's why, as you mentioned, Thor was such a turd. So
yeah.
I liked it for trying on that front. But I don't know. I also kind of think that that's kind of the problem with comics qua comics. But
yeah.
I'll have to leave that issue for another day.
Yeah.
You know, the special effects in this are pretty good. So fans looking for action, I think, will definitely be satisfied. And that's why I like this. The movie is both smart and action-packed, and will satisfy your senses without dulling the mind. So that's a pretty good achievement. And, you know, that being said, I think there's a too few many characters here. When we see some of these characters turn to the dark side, so to speak, it's not entirely believable. It's a little bit cheesy. And that's when we're reminded that the most that we're watching a comic book movie, and we get these sort of trite scenes of the characters saying something like, "But I don't want to be hurt ever again," just before they sort of jump ship to the other side and make a deal with the devil, so to speak. But that's all fine because, well, this is a comic book movie, so they can get away with that. So I'm with you, Mr. Film. Definitely worth seeing. I think A- is pushing it a little bit, so I'm going to settle with a B+ here.
Okay, I think that's good. I mean, compared to what we got with Thor, I think, you know, again, the stakes are – what I liked about this film is that it had, you know, and I read an interview with Matthew Vaughn, who did say specifically that he was inspired in part by the James Bond films from the 60s. And you kind of get that, you know, a really good villain. He does have a really cool superpower, so it's not – It's not this kind of ridiculous sort of thing, and he has a really interesting high stakes plan. And I like also there's some other aspects with, you know, Magneto's relationship with him is really is kind of complex and such. So, but you're right. I mean, it is a comic book. You know, don't think that you're going into seeing Shakespeare or, you know, some sort of Nobel winning prize winning film or something like that.
Sure.
It's a good picture. It's a good, intelligent adventure picture. So that's what we want.
and I like the backstory. I mean, it is interesting that, you know, these people who we know to be arch enemies you know, later on in the series, obviously, started off as very good friends. And I think, you know, that's kind of true in real life that, you know, your worst enemies probably were some of your closest friends at some point. So, you know, that's kind of an interesting aspect. And it's funny also that I had James Bond, you know, mentioned James Bond in my notes, and we talked about that, and you did as well. So we sort of picked that out independently. So, but I think that's good. I think it adds to this and adds to the fun a lot.
I think so too. And there's some contradiction. You know, there's some contradictions with the later film, with this film, with some of the things that happened with this film. But who cares?
Yeah, right.
this is a nice fresh start. A really fun picture. And unfortunately, we this came out a few days ago. The box office hasn't been quite as good as I think they had hoped, which is a little disappointing.
Yeah, but it's decent, and I think it's kind of on par for a reboot, you know, the whole Dark Knight stuff aside, you know, if you take that out of the picture. I think it's kind of on par with that, and it'll be interesting to see how this holds up over time. I think this will hold up a lot better than Thor. Cross our fingers here and hope that it has some lasting legs.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, we're picking on Thor a little bit here, and and as a character, Thor is a comic. I actually read Thor when I was a kid. A good character, etc. The thing I didn't like about the film, which is what I liked about the X-Men film, is that it did try to tackle some bigger issues. It had a good bad guy who had a really good maniacal, diabolical plan, whereas Thor was a little soap opera, and the fights were boring.
And very two-dimensional.
Yeah.
Even though it was in 3D and this wasn't, and was more, had more depth, so there you go.
Exactly. So, So, moving on to the realistic.
All right, Mr. Film. Movie. Well, it's time for our next movie review. You know, Mr. Film, I always get excited when I see a movie where there's a writer and director are the same person, because it seems anecdotally, anyway, that the writer-director movies have a chance of being pretty good. And luckily, I think that's what we get with our next picture, Beginners, from writer-director Mike Mills, and released by Focus Features. Here's the trailer.
This is 2003. This is what the sun looks like, and the stars. This is the president. And this is the sun in 1955, and the stars, and the president. My parents got married in 1955. They had a child, and they stayed married for 44 years until my mother died. 6 months later, my father told me he was gay.
I'm gay.
I remember him wearing a purple sweater when he told me this, but actually he wore a robe.
I'm gay.
He was gay the whole time they were married. Oliver, I just met a girl.
Sometimes I wonder.
Before Anna, I had 4 serious relationships. I let all of them fall apart.
Just be happy about it, huh?
The melody.
For the first time, I saw I'm really in love.
And I am once again with you.
People like us, half of them think things will never work out. The other half believe in magic.
And each kiss an inspiration.
Beginners is one of those quirky kind of comedies that you know is either going to work well or it's not. It's got all the gimmicky tricks that we see in quirky comedies, voiceover narration of the main character, funky alternate reality takes of scenes of stuff that's happening in the main character's head, a non-linear telling of the story, and yes, even a dog that talks in subtitles, as is shown in the trailer. And if you haven't seen the trailer, I suggest you check it out, because I think the movie really lives up to what's promised here. Writer-director Mike Mills has a Woody Allen-esque style and approach to his storytelling that is refreshing. It's smart, clear, and to the point, even amid all the quirkiness that I just mentioned. In fact, all that adds charm as we watch Oliver, played by a charismatic Ewan McGregor, deal with issues of closure with his father as his father faces the final years of his life. The father, Hal, portrayed by Christopher Plummer in what can only be described as an Oscar-worthy supporting role, is gay, though we learn he hasn't come out of the closet until only the final years of his life, which has lasting repercussions on his son, Oliver. Interwoven through this journey are flashbacks to Oliver's childhood as a young boy and various scenes with his mother that are both strangely bizarre and sadly illuminating about what's impacting him as an adult in present day. And we see this impact in the present day in the relationship that he develops with an actress, Anna, played by Melanie Loren. Though sad and melancholy at times, the R-rated Beginners is ultimately an uplifting picture The humor, while quite funny at times, helps carry us through the hard parts without avoiding the issues. At root, this is a story about love and acceptance, and we see a deep love between a father and a son that can only come from acceptance. Acceptance of the son by the father, and acceptance of the father by the son. It's a two-way street for sure, and McGregor and Plummer make this very real. And when it comes to Oliver and Anna's relationship, the movie shows us that if we strip away all the pretenses and expectations about love, we realize that when it comes to this game of love, many of us are, quite frankly, beginners. And that's okay, because removing these preconceived notions is not only the hard part, it is the point. Now, at an hour and 45 minutes, the movie loses a little momentum as it turns to its final act, especially when Oliver destroys other people's property when he engages in graffiti. Now, it's actually kind of a little bit funny what he does right, but it's not exactly romantic, which is what it's trying to aim for here. But I think we can overlook that and thoroughly enjoy Mike Mills' well-crafted piece of art. I'm giving this, Mr. Film, an A-.
All right, Mr. Movie, alas, I have to disagree with you a little bit here. I liked Beginners, but I really, really wanted to love it. It has a great setup, a cute dog, and McGregor and Laurent, another Inglourious Bastards alum, have good chemistry. I even like the flashback nonlinear structure of the picture and this kind of that bit with the when his father comes out and he imagines him in the purple sweater and he really was in the robe, which was pretty cute. I just wish that it was just a tad bit more charming than it was. Well, the story's about Oliver and Hal, and later Oliver and Anna. It's kind of a parallel sort of structure. I wanted to see a little more of Oliver at work, and I definitely wanted a bit more of Oliver and Arthur. The subtitle stuff was terrific, and while you sparing and it was used sparingly, thankfully, which made it even funnier. But I wish it had been used more. I wish there was more of their relationship, because it kind of is this. Arthur is kind of the bridge between Oliver and Hal. Well, the gimmicky stuff in our next picture, Submarine, got a little too much at times. I wish in this case that it had been used a little bit more. That being said, the picture worked for me overall. I liked the romantic relationship, and I like the fact that, you know, with Hal's story, you see that it's never really too late to really embrace who you really are. But I got a little anxious to have it end when it did, and I'm with you. It's just a tad too long at an hour and 45 minutes. But the performances by the leads, and particularly Cosmo as Arthur, made this a nice, sweet picture that was a refreshing antidote to the raucous junk comedies and empty adventure epics that are beginning to dominate the summer cinematic landscape. And just because I felt a little flat at the end of the picture, I have to give this one a B.
All right. I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I think that, you know, the fact that it is having you ask for more, you want more of it rather than having too much. I'd rather err on the side of giving us not quite enough and having us want to go. I mean, I almost want to go back and see this again and sort of re-experience those elements again. I think if the dog had been overdone, for example, it just would have gotten old too fast.
Yeah. Yeah. And the dog keeps asking him a very and there is this kind of funny little gimmick where the Oliver character can kind of they have kind of the psychic link. I think that's the idea. And Arthur keeps asking him a particular question, which is quite amusing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I really enjoyed this, and, you know, I also like that it's very visual in a lot of ways. I mean, this is not a high-budget movie. It's kind of a low budget. It's shot that way, but it still manages to be very visual, and you can kind of see this in the trailer, too, so, you know, that carries into the whole picture, and so I like that, too. It's not just, you know, this happens and then this happens. We get a lot of, you know, he really takes advantage of the medium here, especially for a low-budget picture. I also like the soundtrack in this is really good. So if you enjoy the music, you know, go out and get the soundtrack. The music that's in the movie is actually on the soundtrack. So, you know, definitely check that out. It is very Woody Allen-esque in that sense, you know, kind of going back to lots of old standards and whatnot. So it kind of gives us that nostalgic feeling. And You know, I don't know. It's kind of rare, actually, that we get kind of a gay-themed movie for a mainstream audience that really works. So I'm happy to see that here. I mean, the last time I remember that happening was Kissing Jessica Stein, if you remember that movie.
Oh, yeah.
That was
yeah.
a really, really good movie. And so it manages to take some interesting, you know, gay themes, but make them palatable for a mainstream audience and very interesting and relevant to us. So I like that aspect of it doing that as well.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. What I also like about in terms of that it's more of the universal idea that you have to be genuine to yourself and
exactly.
the fact that the father has to, you know, he got married to the mother in the 50s and they had to live this kind of, repressed life because of the times and such. So I think there was some it makes that part of it more universal, so I think that it's easier to connect with. As opposed to turning it into into a very niche sort of
right.
approach to the subject, so which is fine too. It has its place as well, but I think Mike Mills, and this actually I think is autobiographical. I think his father actually came out to him.
It is to some degree. Yeah, I saw it at a screening at the ArcLight over the weekend, and there was a Q&A afterwards with him,
okay.
So he talked about that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, so it does have this autobiographical thing, and it's about the son kind of coming to terms with his parents and their relationship and his own take on love and life, etc. But again, it just missed the mark on the charm aspect. And I think you may have felt more of the charm than I did, but maybe I'm just too thick-skinned or something. I don't know,
yeah.
I would recommend that folks go out and give this one a go. It just didn't quite resonate with me like Midnight in Paris last week and
Midnight in Paris definitely is better, I think, but this is on par with that, I think.
Yeah.
But okay. All right, Mr. Film, one more movie to go.
One more. And for our next film, Mr. Movie, we're going back in time yet again, but this time to the late 1980s to follow the tale of another Oliver who also has beginner parental and romantic problems. In summary, the feature film directorial debut of comic actor Richard Ayoade.
My name is Oliver Tate. I suppose it's a bit of an affectation, but sometimes I wish there was a film crew following my every move. I don't quite know what I am yet. I've tried flipping coins, listening exclusively to French crooners. I've even had a brief ad phase, but nothing stuck. My parents have not had sex for 7 months. I've been monitoring their intimacy via the dimmer switch in their bedroom. Jordana Bevan's moderately unpopular, which makes a romance between the two of us more likely.
Meet me under the bridge after school and we'll take you from there.
To us, and a wonderful evening of lovemaking.
You're a serial killer.
Dear Jordana, you're the only person I would allow to be shrunk down to a microscopic size and swim inside me in a tiny submersible machine. You're too good for me. You're too good for anyone. Sincerely, Oliver.
I was crying earlier. My eyes are probably red.
They look fine.
Well, maybe they don't go red when I cry then.
I heard the news that you're planning to shoot me out of a cannon.
Oliver Tate, played by Craig Roberts, is brilliant, funny, and alienated. And because of circumstances beyond his control, his seething hormones, and his fear of change, he has only two immediate goals. Lose his virginity and keep his parents from splitting up. What follows is a droll, painful, and heartwarming coming-of-age tale that is neither profound nor a complete confection. For anyone who grew up in the 1980s, and even if it wasn't in Wales where this film takes place, this film will speak to you. It's an age of cassette tapes, typewriters, new age gurus, and when being geeky and smart was the last thing you aspired to. Ayoade, who, like Mike Mills, wrote and directed the R-rated film from Weinstein, doesn't miss a note here. It gives us a rich visual tapestry of the inside of Oliver Tate's mind and surrounds him with a terrific cast of goofy, weird, lovable characters, including his pyromaniac girlfriend Jordana, played by Jasmine Page, and his father Lloyd, played by Noah Taylor, and his mom, played by Sally Hawkins. The 97-minute film is very clever in how it runs the parents and Oliver's story in parallel. Since this is all from Oliver's point of view, we don't get a lot of scenes with his parents together by themselves, but we do get a sense that their relationship problems mirror their son's. While the film does have its weaknesses, the crazy visuals are used a little too much, and the ending is a little weak, I suppose that's to be expected, since Oliver is still very much at the beginning of his story. We get a sense that this is only the end of the beginning. But I found the film a bit more wickedly funny and more engaging than Beginners, even though they're essentially the same story. Maybe I got nostalgic watching the picture. I needed the dark touches that Beginners didn't have. But this film works just a tad better for me. And this is really how a film comedy should look and feel. It's populated by funny, sympathetic characters whose circumstances come as a result of who they are and not arbitrary poop jokes. There's heart here and nothing mean-spirited. While I love Ayodhya as an actor, he's in the hilarious Britcom, The IT Crowd, which I talked about a couple weeks ago in reference to Chris O'Dowd, who is in Bridesmaids. I hope he continues making features like this, smart, funny, and with heart. I'm giving this a B+.
Wow, Mr. Film, you really hit the nail on the head when you said the movie is a rich visual tapestry of the inside of the main character's mind. Except that you said it about the wrong movie. That works for That works for our last review of Beginners perfectly, and rich visual tapestry is exactly what that movie is, and this movie isn't. I mean, Submarine is overly gimmicky, in my opinion. I get what you're saying, and I'm not saying there isn't any charm here. There is some charm, and it's only earned after a long time toward the end, because in the beginning, we basically don't give a whit about Oliver or his girlfriend, and they're really two terrible, terrible kids, I think. I mean, gosh, they get keen on each other after they pick a fight with the fat girl in school, and they tease her.
I didn't say that this is a sunny picture. It's dark.
Yeah, I mean, they basically push the fat girl into a pool of mud, and Oliver does this in order to impress this sick and twisted chick, and she thinks it's funny. So, I mean, come on. I mean, hurting and humiliating other people is romantic? Give me a break. And since when is destruction romantic? It wasn't romantic in the Beginners when they did graffiti, and the pyromania and bullying here is no exception. I mean, romance is about shared values. Okay, so they share self-hatred as their common denominator. But that's just a nicer version of the Beaver's Misery Loves Company theme. I mean, come to think of it, there was graffiti used in The Beaver 2, if you remember, as a romantic element. Yeah. I mean, what's with that? Graffiti is not romantic. But I digress. But that being said, though, we eventually do forgive these kids' shenanigans. After all, they are kids. And Oliver is ultimately a sympathetic character. And that he won me back in the face of such a terrible start definitely says something. And making fun of the New Age gurus, as you pointed out, I think is worthy of some good laughs here. Those guys are fair game in my book. And a few good laughs and nostalgia, you know, helps revive the picture. But it does not a movie make. Submarine, has a very similar feel to Beginners, like you talked about, in both its style and content and story. And I didn't even mention until we started talking about this that they both have the same, the main characters have the same name.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost as if the Beginners could be the middle-aged story that gets told once the submarine kid grows up, if we fast forward and sort of play loose with the decades and geography here a little bit. So I think it's an interesting pairing, but I think ultimately Beginners is the superior product for a couple of reasons. I think its theme is more broad and impactful and ultimately more uplifting and idealistic and resolute. Submarine is the more down, depressed, and cynical take on life. So, you know, I think it kind of speaks to maybe our sensibilities, Mr. Film, a little
perhaps.
Bit. You know, I know you like the darker side of things from time to time,
and I
can appreciate that, too. So maybe our disagreement here is more of a reflection of ourselves than the actual movies. So,
yeah.
But for that reason, I'm going to go with a C for Submarine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I think you missed the boat here. I really do. I think that, no pun intended, but It's a good comedy in terms of the romance. It's a 15-year-old kid, so how, you know, this is not going to be any sort of deep romance that we're going to have here. But they are dealing with some big issues. There's actually a kind of a health thing that happens on, and the kid is he reacts the way a stupid 15-year-old kid would, but he does have to make a choice between the girlfriend and his parents at one point. So I don't know if he makes the right choice per se, but he makes a choice, and I appreciate that. But I think that this had a good pace to it. I think that it does show this kind of you're right. There is a mean spirited to this. This is a more of a dark comedy, a black comedy I would agree with you. Beginners is a much sunnier picture, and I think it's more of a celebration of life and more of a celebration of being true to yourself and such. Whereas this, it's more about this confused kid having confused feelings and doing stupid stuff to impress this crazy girl. So.
Yeah, I
get that. But I think that they're both good pictures. I think that they're both worth a look, and I think that perhaps it's one of those things that if you're in a sunny mood, you want to be uplifted, go see Beginners. If you're feeling a little dark, a little edgy, go see Submarine. I think that may be how you should decide if you have a choice between the two, which one to see. Maybe I was in a darker mood this last week when we were seeing these films, so maybe that's why I connected with Submarine a little bit.
All right, fair enough. I don't know. I say, you know what? Go see them both and let us know what you think about the two pictures, because it is kind of an interesting debate. So
yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that's enough movies to review for this week, Mr. Film.
I think so.
I think next show we're going to take a look at Super 8.
All right.
That should be interesting. And then we'll take a look at another smaller release called Beautiful Boy.
All right. And as always, please visit us at www.moviefilmshow.com. Send us an email. Let us know what you're thinking. Give us ideas for the show, questions, etc. Agree with me that Submarine is better than Beginners. Go to mail@movieshow.com.
Moviefilmshow.com.
And as always, go to iTunes. Check us out there. Subscribe so you don't miss any of our shows. It's free. Give us a rating. And you know what rating to give, right, Mr. Movie?
5 stars.
Because we're a 5-star show.
Or nothing.
Or nothing.
I mean, don't rate it, you know, if you're
yeah, don't rate it.
Less.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Mr. Film. I'll see you next show.
See you next show, Mr. Movie.
It's only our 53rd episode, and you still don't know the name of the show.
Why I always blow that. Always blow that. I don't know why. And you think I'm Mr. Film, and I do that every time.
That's funny.
Yeah, well, that's how it goes. That's just life.
But I don't want to be hurt ever again. Did you see this was with a full crowd?
Yeah.
People were just cracking up at the dogs sometimes.
I love the dog. Yeah.
Graffiti is not romantic.